Today's show is brought to you by KickUp. KickUp helps leaders ask the right questions to get actionable data, visualize information to guide effective next steps, and track teacher growth over time. Learn more at kickup.co. This fall's top conference for educators and leaders is the What Great Educators Do Differently Conference. It'll be held October 14th and 15th in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. See speakers like Jeff Zoell, Ken Williams, and Lavana Roth, all past guests here on the show. Register today at WGEDD.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's show, I chat with Bruce Langford, host of the Mindfulness Mode podcast, and we talk about mindfulness. So the question I want to ask you, how much better of a leader could you be if you were less stressed out, more focused, and more at peace? Take a deep breath and enjoy the show. Hey, Better Leaders. I am so excited to be here today with Bruce Langford. He is somebody that I met through Podcasters Paradise, and that's a place where we learn how to be better podcasters, or just novice and then turn into experts, and who knows, everything in between. And he's just an amazing guy, and what he is an expert in is so important for school leaders. But before we get too deep into it, here's some information about him. Bruce has always loved helping others, and he's worked in the field of bullying prevention starting in 2003. As he helped hundreds of students and adults through bullying situations, he began to use mindfulness techniques more and more to help them regain their confidence and their happiness. For the past 5 years, he's been helping people become more calm, more focused, and happy, all through mindfulness. So if you're looking for more peace in your life, and who couldn't use that, right? A sense of contentment, Bruce can help you with that. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks, Daniel, for inviting me. It's an honor.
So I am definitely a novice at practicing mindfulness. So I want you to explain all this stuff like I'm a two-year-old. And you know, the listeners, I don't know. I don't want to assume that they're Jedis in terms of meditation, or if they might be novices like me too. So can we start with just a definition, how you would define mindfulness?
Well, absolutely. And I sure love what you just said, Daniel. You said, pretend I'm a two-year-old. And the cool thing is that two-year-olds are perfect at mindfulness. It's us at as adults, we tend to take mindfulness away from children without intending to. But that's really a fact. Most children are very, very mindful. So defining mindfulness, let me explain it. First of all, it's just living in the moment. And how many children do you know that just love playing? They love doing what they're doing right now. But you say to them, oh, so what were you playing this morning? What was that game you were? And they kind of look at you like with this puzzled look. And what they really mean is, who cares? Because that's the mind of a child, you know. Yes. And you say to a child, okay, let's plan tomorrow. Let's decide what we'll do first, and then let's plan what we'll do later on and what games we'll play and what we'll do after lunch. And then they again look at you in a puzzled way, because that's not the way of children. They don't spend a lot of time thinking about the future, thinking about the past. They think about the present, and that is mindfulness. But there's another aspect of mindfulness, Daniel, and that is that in mindfulness, if you're truly mindful, you make an effort not to judge others. It's about not judging and not judging yourself. And if we can achieve that, wow, we've really achieved a lot. Because let's face it, what pulls a lot of us back is because we're beating ourselves up. We're judging ourselves. We've got this inner dialogue going on a continual basis. Well, should I really have done that? Well, is that the best I could have done? Oh my goodness. Well, oh wow. You know, and we have this dialogue going. It's a human condition, let's face it. But we can really pull ourselves down because we judge ourselves all the time. And again, that's something that a lot of children don't do so much. They just kind of live. They enjoy their time playing, and then they kind of move on to the next play activity. So does that answer your question, Daniel?
Oh, it totally answers my question. So funny, too. You know, you would have thought that we planned the two-year-old thing in the pre-chat. Like, I didn't mean to set you up so well, but I'm so happy that it all worked out in that way. Very, very interesting what you're saying there about judgment, you know, and to be honest with my audience, that's something that I struggle with. You know, I talked to my therapist about it, and I think over, listen, I've been going to therapy since 2011, not because anything necessarily terrible has happened, although there's been bumps and bruises in my life along the way, but I also see it as a preventative thing, you know, in terms of getting your like car's oil changed, just to keep you mentally healthy. So long story short with that, I think my biggest takeaway over all these years so far going to therapy is that, you know, reality is reality. And when you expect things to go a certain way, you have this ideal scenario in the future of how you want everything to be act out, right? Oh, yeah. And the more rigid your plan is, the more you set yourself up for disappointment. And that really impacted my own life, because when things went off my plan, or when people behave a different way than I think they should, that's when I start to judge them. And I don't like that. And I don't like that about myself. The scary thing is, as tough as I can be on others, I'm even tougher on myself. And that it hurts. It hurts at times. So Bruce, can you tell us make the connection for us? Why does mindfulness help us stop judging others?
Well, that's a great question. And the answer is that as we just think about living in the present and think about, you know, just having positive thoughts. And I mean, it's not all about positivity, don't get me wrong. But as you start focusing on the present, and then you start realizing that, you know, hey, there aren't so many things to worry about, you know, really, like I'm here right now in this particular second, and a car is not going to come screaming down the street and crash into me. I'm pretty sure it's not something I have to worry about. There really isn't anything that I need to worry about right now, because I'm fine right at this present moment. And judging is kind of related to that. If you just really focus on the moment and think to yourself, you know, I'm fine, I'm okay right now, everything's good, then there is no need to judge anything or anyone or myself. Now, the whole thing is, of course, we're human beings. Of course, you know, we're going to keep, you know, moving into little areas, and we're going to have to correct ourselves all the time. And you're going to say, no, just a second, what was I just thinking? Like, why did I think that about, you know, what that other person said or what that other person did or whatever? And then you can just correct yourself and just kind of say, oh, you know what? I don't do that. I don't do that anymore. And then you just think about something else. You think about the present again. And it really makes a difference when you start practicing mindfulness. And especially if you pair it with some meditation. And you might not want to call it meditation. You might want to just say, hey, I just want to take a couple of minutes to just clear my mind and just give my mind a break, because that feels good. But when you pair that piece of just giving your mind a break, taking a little pause from life, then it starts to, you start to feel different. You start to feel better, and you'll notice that you're not judging yourself or others the same as you did before.
Yeah, and what a sense of relief, you know, that would give you. Hey, Bruce, so I'm such a novice at all this. It sounds like you're making a distinction. You know, I lumped them together, but there's a distinction between mindfulness and meditation. Is that true?
Well, it is true in a way, because a lot of people hear that word meditation and they all of a sudden they drop it right into a specific place, and they think, oh, meditation, and they have an image in their mind, and they think, okay, that person takes maybe half an hour and they drop to their knees, or they sit in a chair in a certain position and they say nothing and they think nothing. And, you know, these are some of the preconceived notions people have of meditation. But in fact, some of the people that I've interviewed for my show, they meditate by riding their bike, half an hour every day. That's their meditation time. Or one guy, Brent Seal, he meditates by climbing mountains. And he just loves it. And every time he gets on that mountain, he's in a state of meditation, which means he's giving his mind a break. He's only thinking one specific thought about now. And that's his form of meditation. So I would say that mindfulness is paired with meditation. With meditation. It's just that so many of us don't think out of the box. So many of us don't realize that meditation can take on many, many forms like I've been describing.
That's great stuff. You know where my mind went, and I was trying to Google it really quick. I remember this idea of, in terms of my faith, you know, they talk about praying ceaselessly, and that just seems like so overwhelming, right? Like, yes. How can you pray, especially if you have this preconceived notion that, let's say it's on your knees with your hands folded and all this stuff. Like, how am I going to do that all day? I got to eat, got to go to the bathroom. Maybe I want to work out and hang out with friends. So I had to look it up super fast, but what Google said, so hopefully this is true. Don't know if the person's right, but I know the act is right. It said Brother Lawrence was who came up with this, but the idea, I remember reading something that, you know, just you can be praying, or in this case, you could be mindful. You can do this doing anything. And for him, it was doing the dishes. And that was like a game changer for me. So like climbing a mountain, on this podcast, we could be mindful. We could be praying. We can be in touch on a deeper level. It doesn't have to be something where you pause and stop. Although that helps, you know, and sometimes it doesn't always have to be that way. And it's just that focus on the present. Why is it that the present is so important? And what, you know, why do you try to pause the past and the future?
The present is the only thing that is important, because we can't change the past. We are living in the present right now, and that is the reality of what's happening. That's the reality of our lives. The present is where we are. And if you just stop and think about it, you can control how you feel by just thinking about the present, and you can just relax and take a deep breath and focus on that. And suddenly you can feel a lot better. And you can make that choice. You cannot make a choice about what existed in the past. You can't change it. You can't do anything with that. So really, when you think about it, so many of us stress out because of something that happened, and we get ourselves all uptight, and therefore we are affecting the present moment by doing that. We are changing the way we feel. We're getting tense. We're getting this feeling of anxiety, and really for nothing. And of course, with the future, it's much the same. With the future, of course, we have control over our future in a lot of ways, but at the same time, once you start to get stressed out and uptight about it, you'll probably notice that things don't work out the way you hope they will. You know, it just really doesn't work that way. You can make plans, you can make goals, but then you have to go back to the process and think about, okay, what am I doing right now that will affect the future? And when I say it that way, then you're not focusing on the future exactly. You're focusing on now. You're just focusing on now and keeping in the back of your mind about where you're headed, where you're going. Unfortunately, one of the common things is to worry about the future. Oh my goodness, like what might happen? How will I feel if such and such happens? And what will I do? And you can get very stressed out and worried. And what you're really doing is creating stories in your mind that haven't happened yet, aren't even true. Usually, you know, they just keep getting worse and worse and scarier as you create these stories of some potential terrible thing that could happen. So focusing on the present is really the way to achieve great things for the future. It's the process we need to work on, to focus on. So I hope that helps you and answers your question, Daniel.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, I was thinking too, I have an interview tomorrow. So by the time the podcast airs, we'll know if I got the job or not. And I, you know, I'm going actually for a couple different positions that I'm excited for. So I'm by the time this airs in October, I'm either going to be leading a school, which I would love to do and serve, you know, the couple communities I'm interested in, or I'm going to be pursuing Better Leaders, Better Schools full time. And both of those are very interesting to me. And eventually I think I will have done both. But the fact that I have an interview tomorrow, you know, that is bringing up stress, anxiety. So I know that I'm going to have to take some time to pause after the podcast just to get grounded back into the present, because, you know, I'm probably going to do great. You know, that's what I want to believe. I'm going to be walking in there prepared. I'm not going to be unprepared. I'm going to do my research. I'm going to know my stories. I'm going to be able to share how, you know, I've impacted the community and added value to the school. So, you know, if we really think about it, I'm going to be okay. But if you let your lizard brain and all this craziness, that voice inside start hollering at me, you know, I could get pretty nuts, you know, worked up in the next 10 minutes or for the next few hours. So
yeah, for sure.
You described it perfectly, you know, especially the focus on the present. And I think at this point, leaders really understand or have a better understanding of why mindfulness matters. Did we miss anything in terms of why you think specifically for school leaders, why mindfulness matters?
Well, mindfulness really matters for school leaders because, let's face it, children are our tomorrow. You know, children, we want them to grow up believing that they have many, many choices and that they are free to do exciting things that will really, you know, have a great positive effect on the world. And so in order to help encourage children with ideas like that, we want to make sure that they live in the present. We want to make sure they're not stressed out and worried about the past or the future. And it's just the best way to raise children and help them with their clear thinking. So we have a lot of children these days, like my son, for instance. He's 14 years old, and he spends some time online and watching videos and social media and different things like that. But he actually is a very mindful person. And so what I was going to say is that it's just great to encourage that and make sure that they know it's okay to be thinking in the present at times, and that it's okay to give your mind a break and, you know, just sit quietly for a few minutes and not feel like you have to always be go, 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 completing to-do lists and trying to achieve. You know, that there's a place for that. But we as school leaders, we really need to understand where our children are. And, you know, let's face it, our children are all over the place. We have children that are stressed out because of threats and because of anxiety from their home life. We have children that are worried about their grades. And the more we can help them relax, the more they will really achieve in a positive way. Because, I mean, we've all heard it. We all know it. Once you get tense, once you get stressed, can you really learn? And the answer is not very well. You know, that's just the way our brain works. You know, if our brain and body we're stressed out, it just doesn't take on new information very well. So it's really a perfect place to begin to get our school leaders to help them understand what mindfulness is all about so they can help children in the schools.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, we're just talking to it at like a basic physiological, you know, level. If we're in just a fight or flight mode and all stressed out, like, how are you really going to be able to dig in, engage in complex, you know, content and topics and grow, right?
Yeah.
Intellectually. So, I want to stay there because you're the mindfulness expert. And, you know, how could we incorporate this? How could we teach this more to our students and to our staff? Have you seen any schools doing it? If you haven't, what would you do if you were leading a school?
Well, I've definitely seen it happening. Some schools do it. Some schools don't. Some are kind of halfway. It was excited, Daniel, because I had an opportunity to spend 3 months in a school a few months ago, and I implemented mindfulness into that program. And I was Well, I was seeing all the students in the school. I was seeing them about three times a week. And nice. So with every group, this was a JK to 8 school. So with every group, I implemented some sort of mindfulness with them. And one of the first things that I would keep in mind is don't tell them to do anything. As much as possible.
Right.
And that sounds really funny, doesn't it? Because as teachers, that's kind of the first thing you think. You know, I need to stand at the front of the class. I need to tell them to listen. I need to tell everybody to be quiet. I need to tell them to take out a pen. I need to tell them to take out a piece of paper. I need to tell them all these things. And in fact, none of us really like to be told things. We like to be asked things. We like to be led. We like to be learned through exploring. And so one of the things I would do is I would just do something at the front of the room that would attract attention. And I wouldn't say, okay, everybody listen. I would just be doing this thing and suddenly everybody's kind of watching and listening. And I would say, okay, hear this. And then I would say, for instance, I was playing a tone on a trumpet or something like this, and they're all looking, and they're all mostly, maybe not all of them, certainly until they kind of get used to what my teaching style is like. And so then they start, and after half of the class is listening, then more and more of them are listening. And then I say to them, okay, I just want you to, would you mind just listening to that tone and thinking of one word that pops into your mind? And so then I do it again. I didn't tell them, okay, listen to that tone. I just asked them, would you listen to that tone and think of one word that pops into your mind? And I do it, and they put their hands up. They have a word in mind, or maybe they don't put their hands up. Maybe they're kind of a little bit hesitant. They're kind of thinking, well, this is kind of strange. Or if they're older students, they might think, well, this is something for younger kids. Who knows? But the fact is, most of them are doing it. And so then, you know, if nobody says anything else, I might say myself, well, you know what? A word popped into my mind, and this is what the word was. Did anybody think of that word? And if not, what word did you think of? You want to share? And it just kind of gets people relaxed. So sort of like, hey, this guy isn't telling us to do stuff. This guy is just kind of doing something different and cool, and he's just asking for a response. And so, you know, it may be subtle, but it is a difference, and it really does make a difference in the minds of the students that you're dealing with.
Yeah, I love that picture you just painted. Seems very Socratic in some ways, because you're asking questions instead of just telling, and that's, you know, a teaching model that I definitely endorse. But the interesting thing too, by asking those questions and engaging the classroom that way, you're really drawing them in. Depending on the culture of the school and the history of the school and that sort of thing, that might be way outside of the box. But, and hear me out, listeners, I believe this could work at every single school. Now, I've worked in some tough schools where that type of method just isn't the norm. But using that kind of method, thinking outside of the box, you know, sometimes talking in a softer tone, just asking questions where kids, you're piquing their curiosity. They don't quite know where you're taking them. But as Bruce said, people like to be led. And before you know it, something magical happens. This does work. Here's the only thing. This is the barrier and the challenge to work through. You have to be all in as the facilitator. And if, you know, at least that's something that I believe, and I'd love to hear, Bruce, what you think. But if you waver in terms of what you're facilitating and what you are asking either your staff or your kids to do, people pick up on that. And I think just like on a primal level, they don't trust it as much. But if you believe in it, even if it's out of the ordinary, out of their ordinary, they're going to follow you because you're all in, so to speak.
Daniel, you're right on. And that's the thing with mindfulness. You can't teach mindfulness, I don't believe, unless you do it, believe in it, live it. You know, you don't have to be a guru who has been meditating for, you know, 20 or 30 years. But you have to kind of embrace it, even if your form of meditation is really unusual or it's just very short every day or something like that. You really do have to live it. And, the thing with this is, you know, with the students I was working with, I was able to quiz them after 3 months, and we just spent time chatting, and I actually did some video interviews and some audio interviews with some of the students. And I said, so how do you feel when you come down to my classroom? How do you feel? And they're like, well, you know what? It's really strange. Like, I just feel this sense of peace.
Love it.
I feel,
it's awesome.
You know, I feel this, like, I don't know, it's calm. You know, there's something calm about coming here. Like, we relax. You know, and they came out with all these kinds of answers. And it was just because bit by bit, little piece by little piece, I did some of those things like the example I described. Now, I would just do something like that for like maybe 2 minutes. And then we would be into the lesson and we would be doing things. And then later I'd do something else. And, you know, I'd say, you know, with the little ones, I might say, hey, let's sit around on the carpet for a minute. And, oh, just imagine there's a campfire here in the middle and we're just sitting around a campfire. Hey, listen to this. And then I had some crackly cellophane paper and, you know, we'd crinkle that and then I'd get one person to help us. And, you know, just stuff that may seem like a little bit unusual, but just to kind of get everybody's focus and you're just thinking about one certain thing, you're looking at something, you're listening to something, you're talking about one particular thing. And so, you know, just combination of many, many different activities. And then the students did. They started to feel this sense of calm and peace. So yeah, mindfulness works.
So let's pause here for a moment and get a message from our sponsors. Today's show is sponsored by KickUp, a professional learning data analytics company that provides an easy-to-use platform, helping school leaders optimize their PD resources and efforts by soliciting and synthesizing teacher input on professional development needs, creating an intuitive and simple dashboard so leaders can take immediate and informed action to support teachers, measuring and reporting the impact of the PD efforts over time. Schools, districts, and charter networks leverage KickUp's platform and consultative support to synthesize data so that all stakeholders, administrators, coaches, and teachers can monitor progress, identify meaningful professional learning actions, and demonstrate and share impact. Learn more at kickup.co. Today's podcast is sponsored by the What Great Educators Do Differently Conference on October 14th and 15th in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. Let me give you two reasons to attend. There's visionary presenters at each What Great Educators Do Differently conference. You'll learn from a dozen or more presenters who are recognized nationally and internationally as among the foremost educational thinkers in the field. There's also connection opportunities. In addition to learning from presenters who are accomplished educational trailblazers, each What Great Educators Do Differently conference has time built into the schedule for a mini unconference, allowing intentional time for attendees from all over to network and discuss issues in which they're interested. You can learn more at WGEDD.com. Leading a school may be the most difficult job in the world, but what if I could guarantee that you could accomplish so much more in 1 year than you've been able to in any years past? The secret is to stop leading in isolation and to do so in community. The solution is to join one of my education masterminds. We meet weekly for an hour and discuss leadership and solve complex problems. Text Better Mastermind, that's all one word, to 33444. That's Better Mastermind to 33444 and start your journey to your best year ever. Now, back to the show. So I'm here with Bruce Langford. He is the host of a credible podcast you need to check out called Mindfulness Mode. The link is in the show notes. We're talking about peace, calm, mindfulness, and this has been a great episode, Bruce. I've really enjoyed connecting with you. I'm curious, how did you get into mindfulness? In the bio, we talked about how you helped kids and adults through bullying situations and used it there, but what's the story of you getting into mindfulness?
Well, you know, and just in answer to what you said, I'm thrilled to be here. It's great talking with you, Daniel. In 2003, started to notice so much bullying. And I thought, you know, some of this is just being swept under the carpet. There was one boy in particular. I mean, he just had everything going for him. He was smart. He was athletic. He was musical. He was, and I was a music teacher. So I appreciated you know, that and how involved he was in different things. But then I noticed when I was outside on supervision that he was not looking very happy, and he was hanging over by the wall while the other kids played basketball. And I'm like, what's wrong with this picture? This is not right. He was in seventh grade, and I thought, you know, this boy, I would expect him to be right in the midst of it, having lots of fun. But when I asked around, some of the students said, oh, well, it's his accent. And I said, what? Well, it turns out he had a very minor speech impediment, and he was being bullied. And when I talked to him one-on-one, he at first didn't, but then later he started to open up, and he said, oh, yeah, I get picked on every single day. I just hate going to school. And I don't know why, Daniel, it just affected me. And I'm like, I've got to do something about this, way more than I could do here at my own school. So I decided to create a program and offer it to other schools. And I went to him and I said, you know what, would you be willing to be in a video where you're explaining to people how it really feels to be bullied? And I mean, I realized that, you know, this is asking a lot. And he said, oh, I could never do that. But after a few days, he came back to me and he said, you know, I've been thinking and thinking about this, Mr. Langford. And he said, if I could just make a difference, even in one kid's life, you know, it would be worth it. So yeah, I'll make a video. So I interviewed him on tape, and we took an hour's worth of video clips and edited it down into about a 3-minute video that has now been viewed by over 100,000 middle school students. And they just are just really drawn in by it, because I tell them, this is not an actor. This is an actual student who's telling you how he feels. And, you know, so I got into bullying prevention work this way. And before long, it became my full-time work. I left the teaching profession. It was, you know, my work as an entrepreneur. And then I just went and did hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of presentations, keynote addresses, presentations to teachers, presentations to schools. But it wasn't too long before I realized that, you know, mindfulness is something that really should play a key part here, because if you can really teach children and teachers about the concept of living in now and not focusing so much on the past, so much on the future, just, you know, hey, let's just be happy now. If we can really help each other understand this concept, then bullying will just naturally decline. Because we're teaching people, and we're not teaching as in trying to force them or trying to tell them, this is what you should do. We're teaching them by example, and we're showing them how, hey, you know, I'm a lot more relaxed and calm because this is what I do. This is how I think. And then they start to take that on, and it's really true. Bullying does decline. Does become way less of an issue than it has been. So that's how I got into anti-bullying work. That's how it transitioned into mindfulness. And now I still do lots of talks and presentations about mindfulness, sort of tying these two topics together and how, you know, mindfulness really can make things so much better for students and teachers.
Yeah, I can see that, because, you know, a lot of the drama that we deal with in our school, probably a lot of schools, you know, around the country, or the nation, I mean, or the world, so much drama is drummed up through social media and just this crazy he said, she said type stuff. Yeah. But if you could really focus on the present and not buy into what happened last night on Twitter or what might happen tomorrow on Snapchat, you know, I could see how that would diffuse some of it. One of the questions I have in my head, I got to work through it, I'm just talking out loud now, is like how you help kids process, I guess, transgressions that do happen without, you know, necessarily sweeping those under the rug. But, you know, I think that the key component is that those things happen, they hurt, and we should process them. But even more importantly is like, what is going on right now? It's always that focus on the present and how that impacts our heart, our mind, and our health.
Well, it's true. Stuff happens, and it's a complex world out there. Like, you know, don't get the idea that I'm trying to oversimplify things, because it is complex out there. But the fact is, if something happens, we do have to deal with it. We do have to talk it out. We have to, you know, spend time with the people involved and help them work through it. And this is all really important. It always will be. Not to, you know, trivialize certain things that happen. We have to be able to deal with them and let kids know, hey, you know what? Stuff like this happens, and it's not necessarily your fault when some of these things happen. Or maybe it is. We have to be able to work through this with them, and absolutely. And, you know, it does take experience to do it. But, you know, let's be careful when it comes to blame, and let's be careful when it comes to judging, because we all see the world differently. And that includes children, you know. Things happen, and we just need to be there and be there to listen, because that's a big part of it. If we're really open to listen, to find out, you know, hey, what is happening in that child's life, and where are they coming from as they view this situation? That's so important.
Yeah, and two other things, you know, just understanding, like, you know, one question to reflect on: do you want to live in the past? You know, the obvious answer is no. So how can I help you maximize and enjoy the present? I think that's really important. And then having to understand too, the present really is the only thing you can control.
Yeah.
And that's something that you've really mentioned throughout this podcast. So I've got, I don't know how I'm going to phrase these questions. I want you to only answer one, but listen to them both. I don't know which one you think will be the better one to answer. Like, one of the things I was curious is, can you describe a problem you faced in the past that you could have handled better if you were practicing mindfulness? Or is there a problem you faced in the present that you were practicing mindfulness and you really got through that barrier in a healthier way? So I'm not sure how you want to answer that, but, you know, I'm really just trying to get at, like, how has mindfulness helped you work through problems?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, you know, as a music teacher, I had the band and I had lots of groups, but I was always really, really excited to work with the band. And, you know, you begin at the beginning of the year and the students don't know how to play. And then as the year progresses, they're picking up skills. And I found it really exciting to take them through this process where they arrive at a level where they're really, really proud of the music they can play. Well, I had this one boy, and oh man, I just remember him so well. And He had issues. Like, he had a lot of anger. He had a lot of stress going on. And no matter what, it seemed to be really, really kind of tough to reach him. And, you know, thinking back, I kind of wish I maybe hadn't been quite so driven, you know. Like, obviously, I was a teacher. I was thinking about curriculum. I was thinking about the outcome. You know, how will the students sound at the end of the year? And will they be able to play these scales and these band pieces and so on? And really, when I think about that boy, you know, he was kind of in a world of his own. And I think that because I believe that he had autism and that he was dealing with some of these challenges. And as you know, with autism, you're really seeing the world in a very different way than most of us. He would go outside and he would just spin and spin and spin. And he would extend his arms and he would just spin. And this would be even in seventh, eighth grade. He would do this, and oh, I just felt for the guy so much. But at the same time, you know, I don't think I had the level of understanding or the level of empathy I wish I had, you know, where I could just kind of take him aside and just maybe have a little bit of quiet time and ask him some questions and just kind of give him the feeling that I was there to support him and to really, so he understood that I would be okay with whatever behavior, you know, happened, you know. I mean, you gotta support them. At the same time, you gotta let them know, you know what, if you get angry and you start hitting people, we can't have that. But it all starts with a sense of understanding and a sense that, you know, as a teacher, I care about you and I'm here for you. So that if you're going through stress and you're feeling like all this tension and everything else, okay, let's work out something we can do. If you got feeling that way, give me a sign. Just, you know, give me a little signal.
That's good.
You know, and then you can go out of the room, and I've got this situation set up where you can maybe go to another classroom that belongs to another teacher where it'd be okay to kind of go in and have a quiet time. You know what I mean? Just set something up ahead of time. And the number one thing is to have empathy, sit down, talk, and try to work out a plan that will really work. Because, you know, it's not just students who have autism, but all kinds of children are stressed out. And as leaders, we need to be able to be ready for that and be prepared and have a plan and show them that we care so that they can get through it. Because, man, it's really tough for some of those kids.
So good what you're saying there. And that picture, too, of being in the classroom and really just telling the kid, like, you know, here's the behavior. It's not going to be acceptable, but I'm here. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to care for you no matter what. I could see how mindfulness, you know, would help in that situation. So you've been a tremendous help to the school leaders. And before we wrap up, I do want to hear the story of starting your podcast. I want to promote Mindfulness Boat. I saw on Facebook you shared, you know, your download numbers, and you are just absolutely crushing it, which I love. And that means you're providing a ton of value. People are connecting with you. So tell us the story of starting the podcast. I think you release like every 2-3 days, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, tell us a little more about Mindfulness Mode.
Well, I just got really excited about this because, you know, like doing my presentations, I do a lot of traveling and do a lot of live presentations. Just love it. Really enjoy it. But then I kind of got to the point where I thought, you know what? I can reach more people. I can reach far more people with the internet and what it offers. So I started thinking about, okay, so, well, I blogged for a long time and I knew I reached a lot of people that way. And then I started looking at this whole podcasting thing, and I'm thinking, you know, this could be a great way to get my message out there and to help others learn, and me too. Like, we're all learning. We're all on a journey, and I want to learn as well. And I mean, there are people out there that have like just ultra successful lives in so many levels, and I just noticed that very often they say, well, you know, I wouldn't have what I have today if it weren't for my meditation practice, or if it weren't for the way I'm able to kind of give my mind a break and know how to focus and this kind of thing. And so I just started thinking, you know, I could do this. I could do a podcast. And so I started with two interviews a week, just interviewing really interesting people who are using some form of mindfulness. Everyday people, just, you know, people who are like an airline pilot and all kinds of different people. I've interviewed a doctor. I've interviewed just so many people in many walks of life. And it's just interesting to me to find how down to earth, everyday normal people are able to kind of get a hold of their thoughts, get focused, get grounded, and they use some of these mindfulness tools to do it. So I started the podcast, and then after a few months, I decided to add an episode. So I now do 3 episodes a week. 2 are interviews, and 1 is the weekend episode where I'm just talking about things I've learned or stories, things like that. And I've just really enjoyed podcasting and enjoyed meeting people I've reached out to and who have reached out to me, let's face it, because so many people connect because of podcasts and so many learn because of podcasts. So it's been an exciting journey, and I just really enjoy it, as I know you do too, Daniel.
Yeah, I love it. And what I love about your story too is like you added that weekend piece. And by the time this airs in October, there might be, you know, a 2-episode-a-week type thing. I don't know if podcasting's addicting or what.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is, I think the thing is that people are responding, right? They're yes. writing emails, they're tweeting, they're Facebook, they call and text, they have my phone number. And I get to work through people. I coach school leaders. So I'm developing relationships everywhere. People are responding. And I guess I just want to serve even more. And so, like, for example, in my school leader group coaching, the mastermind, we're reading a book called Creativity, Inc. By the time this airs, we'll be reading something else, probably Procrastinate on Purpose. But the point is, there's so much value in that book. It bothers me that everybody's not in the group and they're not all getting all the nuggets from the book. And so I was thinking, well, maybe I could just do high level summaries or, you know, whatever, like things I'm experiencing. I've also flirted with the idea, if I'm going to be jumping into my first year as a principal, what if I just pull the curtain back, talk about what's going well, what I'm struggling with, what I'm excited about, et cetera, et cetera. Cause that might help someone, you know, yeah. You don't know how to impact. So yeah, probably by the time people are listening to this, the show has gone to 2, 3, who knows? Maybe it'll be a daily show, you know, we'll try to be like GLD, but. Yeah, definitely appreciate that part of your story. So we're going to wind down with just some quick hitting questions. Some are serious, some are ridiculous. First one will be serious. What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
It's The Power of Habit. I just love this book. I read it a few months ago. It's by Charles Duhigg, and it's a great book because as leaders, as principals, well, first of all, it's important to understand yourself, understand your own habits. You know, why do I have some of these habits I'd rather not have? And more importantly, too, how can I create some habits that will really help me do my work better? And this book just nails it with all these things, but it also helps you understand the people on your team, the teachers out there. It helps you kind of see into their minds a little bit, but what makes them tick. And that's what helps leaders be good leaders, is to understand what makes people tick. So I highly recommend The Power of Habit.
That will be linked up in the show notes. Funny thing is, I listen to Smarter, Faster, Better on Audible. I've never asked a guest this. I'm just curious, since you're a podcaster and you consume a lot of content through audio, do you mostly read books or do you mostly listen?
I mostly read them. I do listen to a lot of books, but I enjoy reading them the most. And it seems strange, but I feel like when I listen to a book, it goes into a different part of my brain than it does when I read a book. And I just really love the experience of reading. So that's just my own experience.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to point out. There's a distinction there. What do you do for fun, Bruce?
Well, I love to spend time with my son. I mentioned I have a 14-year-old, and so he likes to get out and do different kinds of things. He likes some kinds of games and different things, and so I just like to get out. And if I'm not doing stuff with my son, I like biking, I like hiking. I like just getting out into nature. That's my favorite thing to do.
I am on a mission to defeat everybody I meet in rock, paper, scissors. Are you familiar with that game?
Yes.
If we met, what would you throw first?
Rock.
Good. I'm entering that into the data file, and that's going to help me. That's going to help me defeat you one day. Okay. These questions are, would you rather? They come from either.io. We have no affiliation with them. I just steal their wacky questions and I ask my guests. So would you rather be sick the rest of your life or kill 2 puppies?
Well, you know what? I could not kill 2 puppies. I don't want to be sick, but I'm not into killing. It's just something I just couldn't do. So
I love dogs. Yeah, I love dogs so much.
And, me too.
Man, I hate being sick, but I think I would choose the same thing, buddy. Yeah. Would you? Now this one's less morbid. Would you rather eat Cheetos or eat Pringles?
Definitely Cheetos. Pringles are not my favorite.
Would you rather be a cat or be a dog?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I would rather be a dog. I'm going to put it just right out there.
Would you rather sleep in your neighbor's bed every night or have to weep every time a joke was told in front of you?
I'll sleep in my neighbor's bed.
Why not? And would you rather always be late or be unprepared?
Well, I'll be late because I definitely want to be prepared.
This is the final question, Bruce. You've done a great job on the podcast. It's a new one. I haven't asked it to anybody yet. Schools often put messages on their marquees. So if you could hack all the marquees around the world and put one message on the school's marquees for one day, what would it say?
Live, love, have fun.
Bruce, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, my parting words of advice are just, you know what? Be a great listener. Just allow yourself to listen from your whole body. Listen to all of those around you, your children, your spouse, your friends. Be a great listener, and that's going to do you really well in your life. And as far as connecting with me, yes, my podcast, mindfulnessmode.com. You can definitely connect with me through email at bruce@mindfulnessmode.com, or you can connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Bruce Langford. And it would be just great to connect with me. So I look forward to that.
Better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to the podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Bruce. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Bruce in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you get the highlights of today's episode and links to all the resources. Bruce, thanks again for sharing all your leadership and mindfulness insights and helping the better leaders be better.
My pleasure, and thank you for doing what you're doing, Daniel. You're doing a great service for the world.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network. Podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.